Mind is what it's all about. And you know, you don't really think about what that could mean until somebody says, "Are you okay?" And you say, "Yeah, I think I'm all right. How you doing?" "Well, I think I'm doing okay." And then one morning you wake up and you pick your shorts up. You said, "Okay, I'm gonna wear a new pair of pants, shorts, whatever they are that day." And so you take the other ones into the laundry room, take the belt out of it, you set them down in the laundry basket, and you walk out the kitchen and put your belt on. But now your belt feels tight because you figure you're gaining weight and it's hard to get your belt in the loops. But you do it anyway. Then you get to work. Then sometime in the afternoon, you decide, well, I'm going to go to the John. And you go into the bathroom and you unbuckle your belt. And you go to take down your zipper and things like that. Then you find out your belt's still buckled. And you look down and you see the belt is unbuckled. But there is another belt right below that that is still buckled. And you have a black belt on, and over the top of that, in the same loops, and buckled immediately over it, you have a black belt. So, you begin to question, are you really doing okay? It's a two-belt day. I don't know if you've ever had that experience, boys and girls, where you're sitting there looking down, and you have buckled a belt over the top of another belt. This makes you begin to wonder and ponder. And continuing on with bathroom themes, I'm here at the studios and going to the John. I'm looking on the floor and I'm picturing, what is that, a fan, a air mover, not sure what that thing is. Oh, it's the lid for the garbage can. So maybe we're doing okay. Maybe we're not. Maybe. But how in the heck do you put on a belt and then put another belt over the top of it through the same loops?
And think that you're getting fat.
And not even notice it.
I have no idea, Frank.
So today I'm thinking a one belt day.
Did you double check?
One belt day today. Had a two belt day yesterday trying to.
We'll have to have inspections every time you come to the studio.
Oh, goodness. I don't know what's going on. You know, Robert and I are talking in the truck or in the parking lot. We pull in, we're talking, and I said, I don't know what I would do if it was a normal year, if everything was kind of normalized.
You would think something was wrong. What's coming to hit me in the back of the head?
I would have a panic attack. I mean, drunk driver miraculously makes it past street signs, light poles, curbs, everything else, goes up in the air, goes 180 feet, and lawn darts through the building and burns the building down and destroying, you know, 34, 35 years of your life. And you lose about $750,000. Not much happens to him. And then you miss the best year in the history of fishing. And then you open up when you can't find help, you can't get products, in one of the slowest years of fishing.
Peewee season.
Yeah. Oh, and we opened up right before peewee season. So.
And red tide.
And red tide. And people now actually think that if you're around red tide, you're going to be poisoned and you're going to die. And it's everywhere. It's not just localized to where it is. Somehow it magically goes everywhere. You know, if there's red tide in Venice, you're going to die in Arcadia. I don't understand what happened to people. For 30-some years, most everybody was pretty normal. And, you know, they would call us up and say, hey, I hear there's some red tide out there. Yeah, well, it's pretty bad in Bull Bay, but go over to the east side of the harbor. Or it's bad on the east side of the harbor, go to the west side. You just went around it. You just lived your life and you made allowances for things. But now everything's either, you know, you can get everything you want or you can get nothing. Everybody's going to die or nobody is. And everybody hates everybody. I can't tell you how many people literally hate people who aren't vaccinated. Even though some people actually cannot get vaccinated because of health issues. There are quite a bit of the population because of autoimmune diseases, heart diseses,
whatever. I would say cardiac problems are a serious issue for somebody that's going to get vaccinated because all of the vaccines, all three of them, have been shown to create inflammation of the heart and microclots. So if you've already got a heart issue and you've got restricted arteries and things like that, you know, you really need to consider carefully if you're going to get that vaccine or not, but... Fortunately, this isn't a show about vaccines.
The biggest thing to me is, if you're sick, put on a darn mask.
Yes.
If you're not sick, it's not helping you.
Right.
Could actually be hurting you. But when you're sick, if you've got sniffles, if you've got a cold, put on a mask. Easy as that.
Listen, I understand the defeatist mindset that's going on. My daughter asked me the other day, she said, what are your plans for the fall, Papa? And it was 10 minutes before I realized she was talking about autumn and not the fall of civilization.
Yeah. I actually watched and enjoyed a zombie movie this morning.
Really?
You can tell what's going on in the country. The good thing is the fishing's not bad. The bad thing is as soon as they see something on TV about a red tide somewhere, everywhere has red tide. Now, I just checked the water flow levels on the Peace River. It is still impossible for red tide to come north of Cape Hayes in Charlotte Harbor. Now, could it happen in Boca? Yes. Could it be in Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, or like at Boquilla? Absolutely. It's very possible. Is there enough fresh water to keep it out of Charlotte Harbor north of Cape Hayes? Yes. It is not coming north of Cape Hayes. It's all about how much fresh water is coming down the rivers. Now, the rivers are dropping 6 inches a day. If we don't get another storm, we will be susceptible to red tides in Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda again. But right now, it's virtually impossible. Guy was going fishing at Elgin asking me about the red tide in Placida. I said, what does that have to do with Elgin? Well, you know, the red tide's there. And I'm like, yeah, it's there, but it's impossible for it to be at Elgin.
And we're looking at a rainy weekend anyway. It's supposed to rain right through the weekend. So, yeah. How has that affected the river heights? We've had a lot of rain in the last couple of weeks. I mean, Elgin Beans really
with
mushy.
It is you're thinking rain here.
Yeah.
And that does not affect the river levels. It's got to be rain upriver, you know. And they haven't gotten as much upriver as I would have thought. It's been dropping a half a foot a day for 3 or 4 days. We're down to like 4 feet in Arcadia at the thing, and once it hits 2, we got no water coming down.
Yeah, we've had a lot of coastal storms the last week.
We only got 2 feet of water, 800 cubic feet per second. Once it gets to 500 or below, then we start becoming susceptible to red tide. But it's a pretty strange thing. But what's really weird about the red tide is it's hitting out in Boca real bad. You get a day or two where Boca Grande Pass is just bad with red tide, Gasparilla Sound, but then it goes away. And the weird part about it is it's not acting as the normal gate barrier that it usually does. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because we've got massive schools of ladyfish in the harbor.
Yeah.
Which
and a lot of little fry, too.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah, I don't understand. The only thing that makes sense to me is that it's just small enough patches out there that, kind of like the tide, I think it's blooming and getting a little bit bigger, and then it's getting crushed by the fresh water that's coming out on those outgoing tides, and then it starts to build up again a little bit. It's kind of like, I guess, fan in the flames or whatever to get more smoke.
Right, there's a lot of fresh water coming down on the surface from the storms that we're having, from all that thunderstorm. So I know that helps a little bit.
Well, it actually helps a lot.
It's pretty brown water going out of Boca right now.
Yeah, that brown water leaving Boca Impasse means there's a lot of fresh in that. Mm-hmm. And red tide requires a high salinity level. The lower the salinity level, the harder it is for it to exist.
Mm-hmm. The masses of ladyfish in the harbor, we've got a lot of red tide along the beaches. Am I right about that?
Right. Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. so those fish are being pushed off the beaches into the harbor, would be my guess.
Well, they normally come in here. It's just that for there to be, that's what makes you question about how strong and powerful or how there's big gaps in between the patches of red tide, because we've got so much little fry coming up inside, and that it's able to basically get out down to that higher salinity because it doesn't like fresh water. It can't live in it for very long periods of time. And so you got to figure that it's just got to be like, you know, it's not a big barrier like Frank said. You know, it's almost like the gate gets open for a little bit, then the gate gets closed off for a little bit, then open back up for a little bit. And I don't know if it's correlating with the outgoing tides, killing that red tide and making an opening for those fish to get away and enough
or
time for them
through,
to come,
I think would be the way to go.
To get through to come back in.
Because the ladyfish were off of a burnt store, Mangrove Point, Whorehouse,
West Wall,
Cape Hayes, the West Wall. There's some amazing schools of ladyfish out there. Mm-hmm. Now, this is the perfect time to get out early because the afternoon storms are going to kick back in, and, you know, you've got to watch. You know, pretty much everybody's got a radar on their phone nowadays. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but keep your eyes up on the sky and watch what the sky's doing, you know, because a lot of these afternoon thunderstorms kick up 20, 30, 50, 60-mile-an-hour winds. So you don't want to get caught in that. So once you start seeing the storms pick up, time to head in. And for me right now, if it's a sunny day, I'm off the water at 2 o'clock. I want to be home in the house, in the AC, by 2 in the afternoon. So go out as early as you can, get your fishing in, and then plan on leaving and heading back in between noon and 1 o'clock. So 2 o'clock, you're off the water. After 2 o'clock, that sun is, you know, punishing. But what's really cool about all this stuff here in the harbor is ladyfish love almost anything that moves.
Right.
If you've got to hunt through your box to find the best ladyfish lure, that's your fault. The fish are going to hit anything you throw out and reel in. Perfect time to be going out with the kids, people who enjoy catching, not fishing.
Or just people that don't know any different and you want to try to get them interested into fishing.
And the time of year when I try to get people to learn how to use topwater lures, to use crankbaits, jigs, because ladyfish are the ideal subject. Mm-hmm. Because they'll hit it. They're going to bite on that sucker. And the good thing is, more than half of them jump off the hook. You don't even have to take them off to release them. You be reeling them in, you get halfway into the boat, and they fly right off. Right. Awesome fish. They're so energetic. Light rods, like a 6 to 12, an 8 to 10. I mean, these are almost panfish weight rods. And if you got monofilm, you need something more than 4-pound test, but 4 to 10 would be nice. With braid, it really doesn't matter. But you don't want to water ski the fish to the boat. So have a rod that has a little bit of action to it. That's what I'm saying. Those lighter rods that normally you wouldn't drag out because you're fishing against the mangroves for snook and redfish. You want a little more backbone to it. Your 8 to 17s, your 10 to 20. You know, find that lighter rod that you really don't know what to do with. Did you come down from up north? Do you have your crappie stuff with you? Fishing ladyfish with a crappie rod is just nothing but fun. Whether it's an 8.5 foot or a 5.5 foot. You don't even have to cast far away from the boat. They'll come hit it right next to the boat half the time. You know, you're reeling it in, and the old trick is reel your lure all the way up by the boat, stop, and do a figure eight with it right next to the boat. Half the time, they'll hit it right there on the figure eight.
Yeah.
Crazy how it happens.
Yeah, and lighten the drag up a little bit. Let them run. I mean, can you imagine what ladyfish would be like if they weighed 50, 60, 70 pounds?
Yeah, it's called a tarpon.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. You know, and I think it's one of the most underrated fish we have here. You know, it's not treated, you know, it's like Rodney Dangerfield. It gets no respect. You know, and that fish can be an amazing fish for teaching, like you're saying about lures.
And if you don't know who Rodney Dangerfield is, just Google it.
Yeah.
You know, that was for anybody under 40.
Yeah, you know, it's a perfect fish to teach people artificials. It's a perfect fish for taking kids out and keep them entertained, and a perfect fish for getting people interested in fishing. But the other part is, how many people? I mean, we sell rods and reels to people all the time, and some people have been fishing for years, and some of them they catch fish, they do okay. But how many people don't know how to hold a rod right to fight a fish? Wouldn't you say 50%, 40%?
90%.
Okay.
90% of the people, minimum of 90%, it's actually higher than that.
Okay.
Don't understand how to hold a rod for saltwater fishing.
Even for freshwater fishing, it's still fighting a fish the same way.
Yeah, most of the freshwater fish, they're smaller. Watch those bass tournaments. They're getting 1-2 pound fish.
Yeah, but they're using 60-pound braid, and they just water skim to the boat.
But that's what I'm saying. They're just, it doesn't matter how you hold the rod, what you do, there's no challenge to it.
Right.
But you get a 28-inch redfish on the rod, you get a 34-inch snook, a 28-inch trout, a 2-3-pound Jack Crevel. Mm-hmm. You've got a challenge on your hand. You're going to wear your wrist out. You're not going to be able to hold it. And immediately those people go to their belly. Right. Instead of using the handle of the rod, what it's supposed to be for, and that's to brace against your forearm so you can bring your bicep into play. You know, you always start out fishing with just your wrist, fighting the fish, and you've got them, and you're holding the pole, two fingers on each side of the stem of the reel, and there is never a point when you're fishing or holding a fishing pole, never a time where you have your index finger only in front of the reel stem. I know it's a gun and you've got to hold it that way. You're a proud American and you're going to shoot everything. But it's a fishing rod, not a gun. You don't need your trigger finger on it. You want your first finger and your middle finger to be in front of the rod stem. Maybe even your ring finger, depending on the size of rod and reel or the size of your hands. So, but never a time when it's just your index finger. That's just the way you hold the rod because that's the way you think you should. But it's highly improper. And so when you're reeling, you want to start off with your wrist. As soon as the pressure gets too much, you just tilt your wrist forward so the butt of the rod comes up against your forearm. That way it brings your bicep into play, using your whole arm as a brace. Easy done. But a little hard to describe over the radio.
Well, and the other thing, too, that I think people make a mistake with their rods is they don't let the rod do the work for them.
Point the rod at the fish and have absolutely no fishing pole involved in the fight whatsoever.
Right. Or they just hold it straight up and down the whole time. They don't rotate it so the bend of the rod is actually following the direction of the line. You know, they want the rod to pull. You know, it's kind of like you and I can reach over to our side and bend our.
I can bend over to the side and pick something up off the floor, but it's a lot easier if I bend forward to get something.
Utilizing your backbone with the direction it has to bend, and a rod does all that for you, and people put so much extra work into it and you spent all this money on a rod. Let it do the work for you. It's amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot of very strange stuff, but
and that's what's great about the ladyfish. You can use it as a teaching tool to show people because you're going to go through a lot of fish in the process. So you didn't make a mistake there, but you made a mistake there. And
the only problem that I have is that I can spend 15, sometimes it takes me as long as 20 minutes, 10 to 20 minutes in a parking lot with somebody and improve their fishing skills by double or triple.
Oh, yeah.
Problem is most guys don't want or are unwilling to accept that help. And people wonder why most of the people I'm in the parking lot casting with are women. It's not because I'm trying to show a woman, you know, more attention or whatever, you know, it's not about that she's got a cute behind. It's all about they're willing to listen and to learn a better way of doing something.
Absolutely.
And I think what shocks everybody, men and women, the most is how far you can cast with very little effort. By applying a technique rather than muscle and power, it's amazing how far you can cast. And they're always freaked out because the first thing I'm telling them is forget about power and speed. We're just going to use your wrist just a little bit, nice and smooth. And they're staggered. Because everybody, they want to whip cast. They want to throw the rod back and zing it forward because it looks cool. I would personally rather look not cool and catch fish than look cool and not catch fish. So anyway, but the ladyfish, topwater lures, jigs, spoons, crankbaits, you name it, they're game for all of it.
Piece of tinfoil on a hook. Now, it's been done.
Yeah, I joke and say, tell people all the time, all you need is an old school bottle cap and a hook.
Yeah.
If it's wiggling and flashing, they'll usually hit it.
Yep.
Now, what's neat about it is, if you want to learn topwaters, probably the best topwater to learn with and actually get ladyfish or any other fish to hit is something with a propeller on it. So it chops the water up, makes a lot of spray. Believe it or not, poppers are one of the hardest things to get fish to hit. Yeah. There's a certain tone or sound that you want that popper to make, and it's very difficult to do. And you've got to use kind of light, sharp jerks to actually make a topwater popper catch fish. It's actually quite difficult. Whereas if you've got propellers on the lure and you just give it a short, hard pull, it'll do it. And the fish will go after it. And you can actually see how to miss a fish. Because you're going to see the fish strike and you're going to set the hook and jerk it right out of his mouth. People are too quick for topwater lures. So when I see the fish hit, I have to actually tell myself, freeze, don't move. Splash, freeze, don't move. Because if you don't stop, the fish is closing his mouth and you've jerked the lure out of the way.
Right.
You've successfully avoided having a hookup.
No, absolutely. You want to kind of actually wait until you actually feel the weight of that fish. You want to feel that rod start to bend.
Yeah. Now, why doesn't that happen with jigs or spoons or jerk baits or crankbaits or anything else?
Because it's underwater and it's a little bit more level on their playing field.
Well, you can't see it, so you don't jerk it out of his mouth.
Right. There you go.
You actually feel the hit.
So if you had x-ray vision and could see under the water, you'd be losing a lot more fish.
You'd lose a lot of fish.
That makes sense.
But if you can't see it, you're not going to jerk it away from the fish.
Yeah, the only reason you know he's there is because the rod bends.
Exactly. So, a lot of hyacinth and leaves and weeds and everything that have been floating out of the rivers lately.
Right.
Because just a few days ago, we had actually pretty high water levels, a lot of water volume, and a lot of those have been coming down. Are they a bad thing, good thing? Good witch, bad witch, or sandwich?
I think they're a good witch. Several different things. Obviously, the mat floating down is carrying a lot of different food sources inside those weeds because those roots, those suspended roots off the bottom of that water lettuce and hyacinth can be several feet long. So it's just a tangled mess there with little shrimp, little freshwater crabs, crawfish, tadpoles. Who knows what gets stuck and hides in there as it's floating down.
And a barrage of different minnows.
Yeah. I mean, it's you literally have, you know, a weed line, essentially, what you're creating along with the food source.
So basically, when you see those rafts of weeds floating out in the harbor and down the rivers, think of it as you would a weed line of sargassum out in the Atlantic or the Gulf of Mexico, and how much habitat that's creating for bait, which and shade for the other fish. I mean, if you're a fish, it's a bright sunny day, you got a big weed patch, even adult fish will go up and hang out under the weeds, like a triple tail, mahi-mahi, and not only can they find food right there, it's more comfortable.
Right. Absolutely. You know, it's definitely one of those things you don't want to... You don't want to avoid it. You want to kind of go over there and take a peek around it, make several casts around it, and be aware of it as it starts to drift down, because sometimes once it gets into the right area, and especially if the salinity starts to pick up in certain points, those little freshwater fish and critters that are hanging in that start to get bothered by that higher salinity, so they start to scatter. They're no longer using that for cover because now they feel that they're going to die essentially if they don't go run for somewhere else where the fresh water won't burn their gills. And so they escape out of that, and that's when some of the feeding frenzies will start too. Or better yet, you get the manatees will start to get into it. The manatees love eating that stuff as it comes down, and the simple act of them eating it is disturbing and spooking off all those little critters off of it that can create some activity all around that. So even if you just see one manatee nibbling away, there might be several other species of fish right there around it at the same time.
Now, the winds over the next few days are going to be about 10 to 15 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've been looking at is we've got east winds today and tomorrow. Saturday, the winds east-southeast. By Sunday, basically, the wind is going to be still southeast. So that should be fairly good fishing in the Gulf. Make fishing in the harbor very easy.
Should make fishing in the harbor really easy, but what's that storm going to be doing that's cruising through?
That's going to head off Texas, Louisiana, is okay. What we're getting at here at the radio station on our information.
Yeah, everything's pointing to the western Gulf, although...
It's going to continue moving northwest from where it is now, and there's a big trough that's preventing it from heading in our direction. So the odds of it coming here are slim, but you know that there's going to be some big ocean swells
right
offshore. And, you know, unless you're prepared to handle going up and down the elevator, don't do it.
Well, the other thing about it is that wind being blown and all the waves blowing at us, it's going to bring in a bunch of the seaweed. It's going to create some nice weed lines. Mm-hmm. So once that storm's passed and the Gulf settles down a little bit, great time to go out, look for some mahi-mahi. And you don't go out looking for mahi-mahi. You go out to bottom fish. And because what's the bottom fishing like out there, Robert?
It's been okay. I mean, mostly what I've heard about because the wind's been a little funky has been the guys catching the yellowtail snapper and the mangrove snapper at about 15 to 20 miles out. I haven't heard much for grouper. And here's the weirdest part. I was even asking a couple customers that have been out or their friends have been out. Not hearing of any AJs at all. AJ season opened August 1st. Not hearing anything. Josh isn't getting any pictures. I haven't seen any posted on the Fish and Frank's Fishing Club page, nothing. It's been really strange.
Speaking of Fish and Frank's, store alert. As of this Tuesday, we're going to be expanding the store hours a little bit. We'll be open 9 to 5 on Tuesdays. So just to let you guys know, we've been telling you as we get help trained, get more products coming in, we will try to expand out the hours. So we're going to be adding Tuesdays 9 to 5. It's not 6 to 6 or 6 to 8, but it's a little bit more. That's all I can tell you. If this was a normal year, we'd be doing stuff way differently. But a lot of products coming in. A lot of cool stuff on the way and in already.
Well, let's ask Robert, the store manager, what he thinks about the store being open an extra day.
Yeah, that's kind of what the look I got when I told him. Yeah, he was not thrilled with me, but hey, you know, life is what it is. And tarpon have holes, and Robert seems to be obsessed with them. So what about tarpon holes right now, Robert?
Well, they're out there in the 20-foot holes from basically Mangrove Point all the way
down
to
That's a big hole for a tarpon.
It is.
Yeah.
But there's been some big tarpon being caught Danny's one of Danny's customers the other day got one that was probably 2 1/4. I mean, it was well over the 200-pound mark. Carl was late the other day coming into the shop because his customer was fighting a fish that was 210 to 220, he guessed. Another customer came in. He had one that was 200. Been several fish in the 200-pound range, and I've seen pictures of all three of the fish, and they're definitely
200-pound range.
Yeah, they're 7.5 foot long all day long.
Wow, that's big fish. That is one big fish.
Yeah.
That one will beat you up pretty bad.
I can honestly tell you, I've done one that's 220, 230, and that hurt. It really did. And I was a lot younger then. And, you know.
And that was with mono back then.
Yeah, that was 30-pound mono.
Yeah.
Yep. That was on a spinning rod with 30-pound mono foam, and that thing really hurt. I judged if the fish was going to break off by how the line sounded. When the whine got too high-pitched, I would drop the tip, let him have a little run time, and then slowly raise it up. And you could hear the line start to sing and vibrate. It was that tight, like a guitar string. And once it got up to about a B, I just backed it off again. Mm-hmm. It was really a heck of a fight. But this is the year to break that 200-pound. If you been fishing tarpon and you're thinking to yourself, God, I wish I could break 200 pounds and you got on 120 or 150, but you really want that massive fish that you can go, okay, been there, done that, got the t-shirt, the hat, and the sunglasses, this is the year to do it.
Yeah.
And the harbor's loaded up with ladyfish, tarpon, there's bait fish out there. I mean,
yeah, there's a lot of those little fry out there, or glass minnows, whatever you want to call it, and some of the tarpon are slurping on that. But they're feeding on the catfish and the ladyfish that are feeding on all that little fry out there.
You know.
And it's crazy.
That Marcellis or Marcellas or whatever it is onto Pine Island,
uh-huh.
That restaurant, they've got some little, you know, like bubblegum things you can put a quarter in and get some fish food.
Mm-hmm.
I know there was at least one or two world record hardhead catfish. All of a sudden, the catfish. Remember when we've been there? It was all sand brim, mangrove snappers.
Yeah.
Catfish found out people are feeding them there.
Oh, nice.
And there's got to be 200 catfish, I would say. You start throwing those little fish pellets in the water,
yeah.
And all of a sudden, boom, 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 and then the boil starts. And, I mean, they're just fighting each other over it. But I saw at least two, and they're hardhead catfish. I thought they were sail cats.
Wow.
Two or three of them were so big. Now they're hardheads. I'm sure there's at least one or two world records in that school.
That would be kind of cool. Wouldn't want to get drilled by one of them, but
no.
That'd be fun to catch one.
So, yeah, if you're looking to break a world record, the canal going into Cape Coral right at Marcellis or whatever it is, we've been there because the food's real good. The staff is real friendly. Real nice place. And just watching the fish out behind there. So,
Right. Anyway,
snook, we're not going to have a snook season again this year.
Nope.
But this is the month when they start, okay, I'm going to leave the beach, I'm going to leave all that, and time to go back home.
Yeah.
Snook is one of the very few fish that actually lives, grows up, and stays in Charlotte Harbor. That isn't, once it hits adult, leaves. Tarpon leave, redfish leave, trout come and go. Sand bream and snook are the only two species I can come up with off the top of my head that are year-round residents.
Yeah. No, I'll go with that.
You know, it's so amazing. We get people that come down to Florida, and they're going to fix everything, and they're going to change everything, and they have no idea what they're talking about. Had one guy say, well, we've got to fix this, because I used to catch big bull redfish in the harbor, and there's no big bull redfish. I said, do you actually think they live in Charlotte Harbor? Well, yeah. I'm like, they don't.
Mm-mm.
I mean, learn a little bit. Research. Read. Listen to, I don't know, do something, but don't just assume everything. because the snook are moving back up into the Charlotte Harbor. They're going to be coming back up in the rivers. We've got some up here already. The canals are going to start loading up with them, Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda, even though there's already some fish up here. By September, there'll be 10 to 20% of the fish left on the beach. Some will just hang out there all year. You know, beach bums. They want to live there. Right. But 80% of them are going to move inland.
Yeah, they all start to migrate back in over this whole next month. Every day you'll notice more and more fish. It's kind of like we talk about them in the springtime. You'll see a group, and then next minute they're all gone. It's going to be the same effect coming in, except for it's not as drastic of groups. It's a lot more singles and doubles coming in rather than a bunch of little buck snook following one big female.
Well, when you're... You know, it's really weird. It's not that much difference. If you see people going somewhere, you know, okay, well, we'll all get together. We'll head up there. And then when it's over, you know, this one goes home, that one goes home, and it's more spread out. Mm-hmm. And that's just kind of the way it is with the snook. In the spring, they all seem to kind of get together. They're all looking for the females. The females are looking for the males. And they all want to get to the right spot and have the right partners. And they're kind of bunching up, figuring everything out. But once the party's over, it's like, yeah, I'm tired. I'm going home. And it doesn't matter when it is. For Robert, it's 8 o'clock. You know, we know that's going to happen. But, you know, I might stay till, what, 8:30, quarter to 9.
Right.
Yes. Sunrise for me.
Yes.
When the sun comes up, it's time to go home.
Yes, but your fangs retract at that
point. Right. That's right. And the hair goes away.
So, let's see. So, snook fishing, what I like about fishing for snook is it's a lot like fishing for ladyfish, although they're much more wary. Ladyfish, it's just kind of, there it is, get it! With snook, they will hit a jig, bounce along the bottom. They'll hit a crankbait swimming through the middle of the water. They'll hit a topwater lure. They'll literally go for anywhere. Now, the way they like to eat the least is off the bottom, mostly because they got that big, pouting, protruding lower lip. It makes it a lot harder for them to go down on the bottom and eat. But now if they can go right along the bottom and just kind of scoop something up as it's either going up or going down, very easy for them. Anything in front of them or above them, they're top-notch predators. They're about 70% effective trying to get something off the bottom.
Right.
They got to kind of roll their head to the side to get things off the bottom.
Well, they're a vacuum feeder, you know, and them going off that bottom, they don't want to suck up that dirt into their mouth and gills because their body isn't designed for that.
Yeah, if you ever seen any underwater footage of a snook eating something, they pop that mouth and those gill covers open. It creates a vacuum and it sucks whatever they're after in. I don't see that working as a bottom feeder.
But the weird part about it is they are still pretty good at it.
Well, yeah, absolutely. That's
and
a good question.
Whereas a redfish feeds best off the bottom, pretty good in front of them, and really bad off the surface. So thing I love about topwater fishing for redfish is seeing the boil, because they don't come up and strike at it. They literally would never even get close because they have that big nose. Their eyes are back too far. They have a very hard time seeing that. And everything would probably, if they tried to look forward, it'd be very cross-eyed for them. So when they're feeding on the bottom, they're actually made for that. They can feel, sense, smell, dig along the bottom. They're built for it. Feeding straight ahead is pretty good for them. Not as good as on the bottom, but pretty good. But trying to feed off the top, picture a submarine surfacing and then doing a circle, trying to eat something. That's how a redfish works. They don't come up like a snook or a trout, a largemouth bass, and try and suck something in off the surface. They literally got to get their whole body up out of the water because their mouth is on the bottom of their face.
Yeah. Yeah, they have to get their whole head out of the water pretty much to come down from up above it.
So the person throwing the topwater, very unlikely, even if you did not jerk it out of his mouth, it's unlikely you're going to get hooked up. But the person, other person on the boat who has something subsurface, like a spoon, a crankbait, a jerkbait, soft plastic stuff, anything in the middle of the water column, as soon as you see him blow up on that surface, it's hungry fish. It wants to eat something. It just chased it. Cast right there. As quick as you can get to there.
Yeah.
And 8 out of 10 times you're going to hook up. 8 out of 10.
Or if your buddy's throwing that top water, cast right behind him if you see that weird footprint.
Now, the hard part about it is every second you delay getting your lure there on that blow up when he did that, your chances go down 5 or 10%. I would say
easily.
Probably 10% a second. So you have an 80% chance of, you know, hooking that fish up if you're there within a second of the blow up. You get 70% chance, 60% chance, 50, every second that goes by, your chances of going down. If it's 10 or 15 seconds later, you're down to almost none. I mean,
well, think of what's going on with that redfish. He's just told every predator in the area that he's there. And he's not going to hang around that boil noise and wait for something to come and eat him. So they make that attack on the surface, and the first thing he's doing, he's heading back towards the mangroves. He's going back down into the bottom, into a trench, something. But he's told every predator, you know, every flipper, every shark, anything that's in the area, hey, here I am.
You know, that's an awesome point that I never thought of.
Yeah.
No, I've never had that thought. That's an excellent point. I just didn't even consider that. I thought, well, they're going back to where they were feeding or whatever, whatever. But you're right. They just said, hey there, come eat me.
Mm-hmm. With a big boil on the surface, that sound goes quite a distance. So he's not going to hang around there for very long.
Very insightful.
That is, actually, because that's something I never really gave much thought to.
Some big fishermen we are, right?
Right.
Yeah, I'm good at this, huh?
Hey, we get taught and learn new stuff all the time. And I forget what we were even discussing the other day that was like an epiphany of something.
It just keeps happening.
Yeah.
We were in the store discussing something. One of the guys, new guy, John, was there, you know, and he's looking at us because we're talking over an idea. I don't remember what it was, but, you know, how we do here on the show. That's how we figure stuff out, and we do the same thing in the store. And he just couldn't believe, like, we're talking about something new. And I said, what? He says, well, you guys have been doing this forever. What was that about? I'm like, hey, learn something new.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the object of this show is it like a normal fishing show? Do I rant too much? Do I go off topic a lot? Yeah. But the object behind this is when you listen, you're going to get that one little nugget, that one bit of information that's going to take you from every once in a while fish to a much more consistent fisherman, or from having nothing going on the whole day to having a really good day. It's getting you up little by little. And it's not, okay, here's a bunch of fish over here, use this lure. That is not what's going to get you there. It's understanding why that fish is there, why he's hitting it, what the fish likes, what the fish doesn't like. These are the details that makes the difference.
Yeah.
It really is.
It is.
I've listened to a ton of fishing shows, and there's fishing reports all over the place.
Right.
And we want to throw in all the fishing reports and everything else, but we can come up on a new hypothesis, a new theory, a new explanation. That's what's going to make the difference. When you come to Florida, because there's probably 10, 15,000 people listening from out of state. And what we want you to do is have these little memories and these thoughts. And you're going to be out there in the water. You've waited years to get here. And you're going to make that cast. And you're going to go, wow, I know what to do. You're going to understand it. And that's our goal, is to help you understand. I know the goal seems like for me to sit here and complain about the world, but that's not actually the goal of this. Even though I do have two belt days every once in a while. I've decided I can describe my life, how things are going for me, by one belt, two belt. So,
and when we get to three belt, we know we've got a problem.
That's, I think if I ever get to three belts, I'm pretty sure I'm going to lock myself in a room somewhere. Two belt days are hard enough to explain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. But
that would be tricky.
I thought two would be darn near impossible.
Yeah.
Without knowing it, without even considering wearing two belts all day.
Yeah, and it shows you, boys and girls, anything is possible.
And nobody noticed.
Yeah.
It wasn't just me. I had a brown belt and a black belt on all day. This was probably 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, somebody thought it was a fashion statement.
Yeah, that's me. I am the most fashionable, trendy person. If we're talking 1974, but as far as the 2000s go, I am the least fashionable person you'll ever meet. All right. We talked about the lettuce coming down the harbor. Now, would those floating rafts attract ladyfish?
I think so. I think they absolutely would because of the little critters that are all mixed into that. You know, never mind the shade like you added to, but all the little bait fish, because, I mean, look at what they're feeding on out there. And those little bait fish, I think, are going to be even attracted to it because those roots are holding freshwater algae, which is going to hold freshwater copepods and little tiny baby shrimp of different species.
That's why he's here, copepods.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nobody else, me, you, or anybody listening, knew what he meant. But we're all going, oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
yeah, copepods. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, copepods. Crazy for copepods.
Exactly. Okay.
Little freshwater snails. I mean,
Okay, freshwater snails. There you go.
Yeah, just
now I'm back
hungry.
In the conversation.
Yeah, Count Blackula. All right. Let's see. We got no redfish yet either, right?
No, the redfish are schooling up out there.
But I'm saying legally.
Oh, no.
We're not allowed to keep snook or redfish yet.
Nope, not at all.
And that doesn't look like this season at all, right?
Pretty much.
I think it's closed till May, regardless of what happens.
Yeah, May of next of 2022, and then snook is September of 2022.
Maybe.
So, but even though they opened it in Tampa, they just shut it back down. It was only open for like a month.
Yeah, the problem is
their red tide up there, they actually just said, nope, forget it.
Depends on what Facebook is doing.
Right.
Yeah.
There's going to be another Piney Point release sometime in the next 3 to 4 months, they're talking. Because the front wall of the retention pond looks like it's damaged way more than they thought.
Well, they're going to have to end up draining it.
Very likely. So, but the next release is going to do similar to what's going on. And from what
why wouldn't they just take a smaller pump right now and just let a nice, slow, small discharge go rather than bursting it out with, you know, big pumps? It doesn't make any sense.
Somebody said to me the other day, they were talking about FWC and the board on FWC, and she said, well, look up and see who each of them are and where they're from, and then call me back and tell me how many Floridians are on that board.
And not only that, how many people have ever held a fishing pole or shot a gun, or even go outside, you know?
Even just gone hiking in one of the nature trails or anything in the parks. Yeah.
These people running FWC should be mandated. Somebody from the fishing industry, somebody from the hunting industry, somebody from ecotourism, somebody from all the different things in Florida. Because the list is massive. Not one person from any industry or recreation is represented.
Right.
It's all about whose brother needed a job or sister.
And a fine job they're doing, too.
Yeah, fine job of following Facebook, which I don't even post on anymore. I let other people do it because I don't want to see it. All right, redfish. A lot of redfish in the area. We only got 2 minutes. I'm going to call it as Bull Bay, Turtle Bay. Where else, Robert?
Burnt Store Bar. The south side and the north side, both. And cool. Those, that's where you're getting schooling redfish. A couple hundred fish in a school.
So you're not going to see much of those redfish up around the Myakka River or the Peace River. Mm-hmm. It's possible, but the biggest conglomeration is going to be as you come through Boca Grande Pass, anywhere on either side of that, all the way over to Burnt Store.
Right.
Because that's where the adults come in. They're looking to join up. So we're actually seeing a few schools of adults come in already.
Yeah. Yeah, 30 to 35 inches. Biggest fish I've heard of so far was 35 and a half inches.
And but I still can't figure out why we don't have 40 to 60 inch redfish.
I don't know.
That's how big they get.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Don't understand it. But
I mean, they get the same population up there in Louisiana, so I don't understand that either. It doesn't make any sense.
And there's an amazing population of black drum, believe it or not. Some of the Port Charlotte canals, like over off the O'Hara, back in the back of PGI, there's a couple canals that are holding a lot of them. We've got, and these are 20 to 60 pound fish.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
a lot of them around through the canals, more than there should be. Let's put it that way.
Right.
And I'm hoping that they're going to do another pass through the harbor. So, is that it, RJ?
That'll do it.
Well, Fish and Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, and RJ up in command and control in the golden chrome towers of powers. Any want to say goodbye, Robert?
Goodbye, Robert.
Bye, RJ. Bye,
bye.
Robert.
Bye.
Bye, Frank.
Goodbye. Goodbye.